It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Marius, Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
for a
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin or Rumble or listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. If you haven't rated the show, we would appreciate 5 stars if you think we've earned it. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. I hope to see you all in Mexico, in Acapulco, Anarchapulco in February 16th. We'll be there all week. I'll be emceeing the event again. It's the best week of the year. Come on down. Go to anarchapulco.com. Use the promo code MACRO if you're thinking of coming. Or if you can't make it, you can stream the event live. It's available wherever you are. We appreciate our sponsors. They help to keep us in business. Legal Shield has been in business for half a century in the United States and Canada, and they will get you access to an attorney that's right down the street from you for $1 a day. It's $30 a month. You'll have access to an attorney. You'll get an app on your phone. It's real easy to use. You just fire it up and say, you need legal documents done. Do you have a last will and testament? You need one. Do you have a medical directive, a financial power of attorney? Got to get these things in advance. Once you need it, it's too late. You don't want to be looking for your last will and testament when you're facing some sort of health crisis. So be proactive about it. Do it now while you can. Do it while it's $30 a month. I mean, it's about the easiest thing you can do. Just go to don'tgetpushedaround.com and check it out. See what you think. They have packages for people who run small businesses. They have an ID shield if you're worried about your identity. They have documentation for those of us who carry guns around. And so if you're thinking that you might need an attorney, but you don't really want to spend all the money to have one, well, this levels the playing field for you. So go to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com, read up on it, see what you think. And if you like what you find there, go ahead and pull the trigger on it. It's the best money you'll ever spend. And make sure you knock out all these legal documents in the first month. And that way it pays for itself for the next couple of years. So take a look. Also, Christian Yordanev has, he's going to open up the hood and look under and see what's going on inside you. If you're feeling like your health is suffering, or maybe this is the year that you finally take control of your health, you might want to take a look at livelongerformula.com. He's my certified health practitioner. I outsourced that to him. I trust him with my life. We did a metabolic functions assessment right when I turned 50, right before I turned 50. I wanted to know what my baseline levels were. You get like a My document was about 13 pages, and it showed all kinds of things going on, what you're low in, what you're high in, where you need to add supplements, what you need to be concerned about. I did it. My mom did it. He found two different parasites. He found a C. diff parasite and two forms of E. coli in her gut. The doctors didn't find that, but he did. And as soon as he ran the proper tests, so I think you need to not lie to yourself. If you're not feeling entirely great, you don't want to wait until, you know, this is like hearing a rattling in your engine. You don't want to just put that off. You got to go see the mechanic and find out what's actually going on and don't live in denial. So commit to doing this in 2025. You won't regret it. Go to livelongerformula.com and Christian's program. He'll give you a complimentary metabolic functions assessment if you just mentioned that you came from our show. So take a look and check it out. Well, this is going to be an important episode. We're happy to have William Ramsey back to talk about Trump's second term here. Great to see you again, William. How are you?
Doing well, Charlie. Thanks for the invite back. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, well, this is one of those things where we've had Trump the first time around, and you always kind of wonder who he's associated with. Is, you know, John Bolton in his inner circle? That's never great. He was claimed to be draining the swamp, yet bringing alligators with him. It was really kind of enlightening to see that. Now you would like to think that after 4 years of being put through the ringer financially, legally, almost physically murdered, that he would have a change of heart and maybe want to surround, you know, take a second look and maybe come into this with his eyes open and be less dependent on those around him. So I think it's worth asking this next batch, this Trump 2.0, these people that are in his orbit, who are they? What are they? How did they get there? Did he seek them out? Are they positioning themselves and wiggling their way into him? I mean, you know, he's a polarizing guy, and he attracts all types, people that want to help him and people who want to destroy him. So what do you make of the current batch of people that he's picked out to start the second round?
It seems like an interesting group. Musk alone is a very interesting change from his first administration. So he's got a lot of tech people. And you can see in this inauguration that happened yesterday, the 20th, all the tech giants were there. Zuckerberg, the head of Google, Apple, and Musk. So it's interesting that he's aligned them. And also kind of some of the cultural people he surrounded himself incredibly with. Joe Rogan was at the inauguration. So the tech bros, I think, really were somebody he credited his son, actually, I think, publicly yesterday for setting him up with those talks, and Vance talking with him. And I think that was one of the big kind of things that put him over the top, or a commanding win compared to them, the left cheating as usual. But so I think that some of his new people are interesting, and some of them are in the topic we're going to cover today, which is the Knights of Malta, which a lot of people don't know about. I didn't know the details about it, but there's some very important people very close to Trump who are associated with this group that's a millennia old.
Yeah. So Knights of Malta, formed in 1099. Is that correct? We're talking about, we're used to secret societies that have been around, you know, Skull and Bones, been around 100, 200 years or whatever. Man, when you're talking about something that's been around 1,000 years, they've got a lot of skeletons in their closet. Who are the Knights of Malta, and what is their story?
So they go all the way back to the Crusades. They are a knight, an order associated with the Catholic Church and involved in, you know, the Crusades. And they really are an order after St. John, so St. John the Baptist. That's their patron saint. They are focused, or supposedly focused, on assistance to the poor and hospitals and things like that. They're distinguished from the Templars. The Templars officially kind of died out in the 14th century. But these guys really never died out. They kind of morphed and changed and still kept their power. The Muslims took over the Holy Land, I think, in the 12th century, like 1147, and kicked out the Knights of Malta, who then went to Cyprus, then to Rhodes, the Isle of Rhodes, and then both got kicked out by the Turks or the Ottoman Empire, and then ended up at Malta, which is a three-island kind of small chain, really smack right in the center of the Mediterranean, south of Sicily. And so they were there all the way to 1798 until they were kicked out by Napoleon. And the rumor is that they were always presenting themselves as a benign, benevolent group, but there are stories of piracy and anti-Muslim kind of things, and not all above board. But they've had and really are part of the kind of Western or European elite, landed estate aristocracy, that have been around, even though the nation states have changed and the borders are changed. A lot of these old names people would recognize from Spain, or like Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which is the original name of the Windsors. Also, King Charles III is a member of the Knights of Malta. So all these other kind of places all through Italy, these old landed estate aristocratic families, Italy, Spain, France, Germany, England, even Russia, Greece, all are members and interested in the Knights of Malta. So I think it's very important to understand that what they are up to and what their real kind of connections. We talked about that when we talked about the Pilgrim Society. Right. It was public and private diplomacy. So you have this kind of public diplomacy, like the Secretary of State, but these are the kind of private diplomacy where these guys meet and have means of communication and places to communicate that may not be above board.
I was looking into Les Cercles, this shadowy group that comes out of that European, German, French, Belgium aristocracy, and seeing all the people that were parts of that group. And I felt like the Venn diagram was interlocking quite heavily with the Knights of Malta. You're not in Knights of Malta and then you're not excluded from others, right? This is, you could be a part of this group and be a part of Bilderberg, or be a part of Les Cercles, or be a part of Pilgrims. Is that true?
Yeah. What's the criteria? If not all, I have a picture of my slides that I gave you with David Rockefeller, who's a member of probably all of them, Le Cercle, or whatever you want to call it, which is interestingly mentioned in one of the Ian Fleming books, James Bond books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you'll see it in, I think, one of the early Bond films. They have a club called Le Cercle. And he would know. He's a member of an old English banking family. So yeah. It's kind of interesting how fiction and reality kind of overlap.
Yeah. So what is the criteria for getting admission into the Knights of Malta? You mentioned it's Catholic based. Is it exclusively Catholic? Can you bring in some Zionists if you need a job done, or how does this work?
That's a good question. I don't know exactly. Currently, there's 13,500 knights. There's also women involved. So you can, there's like a woman's order. There's chaplains. There's all kinds of different subgroups. So it's not really kind of just one group. It's kind of, there's kind of like a flow chart of different kind of bodies within the Knights of Malta. But how you become a member, I think you're invited in. And a lot of different people. It's certainly not very racially exclusive, because there's been, you know, some African-American guys. The known, much like the Pilgrim Society, there isn't like an obvious member list. So it's hard to say, but some people admitted and some people compiled stuff. And since we last talked, I found some of the member lists to the Pilgrim Society, which were on Michelle Chusadovsky's website, which are very interesting. Yeah. Tucker Carlson was one I didn't know about, which is not disclosed.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Pilgrim Society. So I wonder what other groups he's involved in as well, which haven't been disclosed. I'd be interested to find out, but I don't think it's exclusively Catholic. So I don't think that, cause just by knowing that Alan Dulles, who comes from his dad was a Presbyterian minister. So he's a member of it. So I know that it's not exclusive to Catholicism, even though it is a Catholic order under the Holy See, as they say.
I've got, tell me if I've got a list of some former members. You tell me if this lines up with what you've got.
Okay.
In no particular order. James Jesus Angleton, yeah. George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, John Bolton, Pat Buchanan, Jeb Bush. Not that he's doing much of anything, but Mark Carney, dangerous banker, William Casey, William Colby, those two, Alan Dulles, Wild Bill Donovan, Otto von Habsburg, Les Cercles founder. So I'm assuming there's some overlap there. George Tenet, Bob Zelek, Alexander Haig, a lot of Reaganites in there. Frank Sinatra was an interesting one. You've got Frank Sinatra too, yeah?
Yeah, I sure do. I didn't have Bolton, so I'm surprised to you.
Yeah.
But surprising, not surprised.
Exactly. King Leopold from Belgium, Samuel Alito, two very dangerous guys in the U.S. military, Stanley McChrystal and William McRaven. This sounds like Bohemian Grove to me. I mean, I'm getting a lot of that overlap between what those guys in the Redwoods are doing. It seems, I mean, you can see the pictures of Reagan there. I mean, there's no secret that that's been going on. Was the Reagan administration pulling out of Knights of Malta? Was Knights of Malta in charge of staffing the administration? Or is this the same playbook for Trump 2.0? What do we think of this?
It sure seems like it. I mean, I think that there's a lot surrounding Trump. I mean, there really are. So we know about the Reagan people, Reagan himself and Bush. So I think the whole Bush family is probably members going back to Prescott. So it's Prescott and then HW and W and Jeb. But, you know, so that's the Reagan. But this one, they have Alina Habas, who is his kind of in the, if people remember, Kellyanne Conway. There's actually pictures of them recent within the last couple of days together. So Alina Habas is kind of filling that role. Her dad is a chancellor of the kind of American outpost of the Knights of Malta. He's pictures of him with the classic Maltese cross, this classic symbol. And he's very much involved. He's actually a kind of a... an anachronism, really a Chaldean Catholic. So somebody from the Middle East who, even before the current nation states, was a Catholic. So that's kind of, and he's a gastroenterologist, made it to the United States. But also you can include Steve Bannon with an association to the Knights of Malta through a well-known Catholic with the last name Burke. So he's worked with him, another Knights of Malta member. And then Eric Prince, formerly Blackwater, which has gone through two or three incarnations. I don't know what it is now, but he's very much still involved with Trump and was involved with the assassination investigation in Congress when they had this kind of congressional inquiry. He was there, and his associations and his friendships are remarkable. Close friendship with Pete Thiel, and Thiel's nexus is all over the Trump administration.
Yeah. What do we make of Peter Thiel? He's got Incutel ties, obviously Palantir with everything they're doing with the Department of Defense, Facebook, a dozen companies, Mithril Capital, VC funds, right. Founder Fund, all that stuff.
Andrill, I mean, yeah, all these things.
He's in everything. This is a guy I get very bad vibes about. He claims to be a libertarian. Claims to be one of these, you know, but I feel like he's the walking embodiment of a wolf in sheep's clothing. You know, if I expect him to peel off his human skin suit at some point and reveal himself to be an alien. And at this point, talk about a bad interview. Holy moly. I don't know if you caught him on Rogan, but they did a compilation video of his three hours on Rogan of Peter Thiel umming and awing his way through it. They condensed it down to a 1 hour video, and it was just him going he's really bad on camera, and but boy, is he a dangerous dude when you get him outside of the Rogan studio. I have bad feelings. What do you think about Peter Thiel? What's your take on him?
Very sinister, actually. Yeah. Kind of almost like a Bond sinister figure, very much involved in the genocide that's taking place in Gaza right now.
Yep.
Palantir is being used as a targeting device. They kind of notoriously murdered a bunch of chefs who were trying to feed people there. There were seven chefs that were supposed to. The story is they were targeted by his AI targeting system, and they were murdered under Jose Andres, famous chef. That leads back to Thiel. Thiel also has VCs all over and all kinds of hands in a lot of different tech companies, and very much involved. Palantir is just a massive data grinding system, just on massive and all kinds of stuff with the government. And much like Musk, they really don't disclose, as they, like you said, a libertarian, but Thiel and Musk have made their dollars off of government contracts, which they don't like to admit, because it's kind of like eating from the government trough is not very Silicon Valley, tech giant mentality. But we can go back about his stuff, like he being outed by this magazine, which he went after. And there's some stuff I could tell you offline too, but I would keep an eye on that guy. He's part of the PayPal mafia. So he's friends with Musk and all these other characters.
Yeah.
Guys from Salesforce.
Really like the dawn of the PayPal mafia, that Vanity Fair article about them, you know, trying to compare them to the Sopranos or anything. It wasn't too. I mean, how insightful it was to film that, you know, to take that picture years and years ago, or sort of, you know, and to what they have gone on to do in the aftermath is alarming. I mean, I don't fault anybody for starting a company and taking it public and making some money off of it, but when you do it in a way that these guys have done, where it's all connected to the government, it's all one, you know, large pool of money that they're drawing off of, it makes me very nervous. But let's not go past Eric Prince yet, because I this is a guy that really made his bones in the Iraq war, with back when they were Blackwater, and the murder spree that they went on, where a bunch of his guys killed civilians and went through trials and whatnot. And I think Prince sort of relocated to Abu Dhabi, if I'm not mistaken, and he's a dark figure as well. What is his relationship with Trump, do we know, going forward?
I think he's been a long-term advisor of Trump, so for a long period of time, been a friend, and like you said, like, he's kind of a sinister figure. Blackwater's gone through a lot of rebranding, which is strange, but there was also you mentioned McChrystal earlier. Mm-hmm. There was an interesting kind of conflict between famed journalists, who's really one of the great American journalists, Seymour Hersh, and McChrystal, where he was claiming a lot of these guys are like crusaders and said a lot of stuff and mentioned the Knights of Malta. And there was Seymour Hersh gave a speech in Kuwait, of all places, about kind of what was going on in the Middle East. These guys had a crusader mentality and named McChrystal as these kind of right-wing traditionalists, kind of like Knights of Malta. And so you have these Knights of Malta literally kind of involved in a crusade in Iraq around that time. So, but yeah, I think that Prince has some, like, the left would call him a fascist. He has some pretty interesting connections and ideas to kind of right-wing literature as well, which I've heard him quote. But yeah, he's in the mix. He's still there. So I think he might be in the shadows even at this time. I didn't see him at the inauguration, but like I said, he's friends with Thiel. Thiel, by the way, also is looking for Maltese citizenship. So he has EU citizenship and he's looking for Maltese, which would give him kind of more security and ability to travel. And the Knights of Malta do have that. They have some kind of extraterritoriality. So they're able to issue passports, and they have diplomatic relations with 100 countries and observer status at the United Nations. So they still have import. But yeah, Eric Prince is an interesting guy. No, there's no question about it.
So it's not hidden. Knights of Malta is not. It's out in the open. It's acknowledged by the UN, and you can get a passport, which would be a wild one to have, I suppose. I'm guessing you have to be a member in order to get a passport.
I think so. Yeah, I think you can get a little Knights of Malta passport. Wow. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's still, they have very active websites. They have up to dates. They've initiated their first kind of North American head of the order. I forgot his last name, but so it's all open. It's just not spoken about, and it doesn't seem to have captured the interest of journalists or the public. Like, they're not as, maybe within the Catholic Church, where they're more familiar with these various orders, the Jesuits and the Cistercians and all these different kind of knighthoods. Knights of Columbus too is very powerful, so there's a lot of overlap with the Catholic Knights of Columbus, with the Knights of Malta. But it doesn't seem to have captured the mind. And some people think these guys are some of their critics think that these Knights of Malta are LARPers, live action role players. I've seen that in multiple instances. I don't think they are. I think they're very serious about their connection to the Holy Land. There's also a Knights of Malta outpost on the Via Dolorosa, which is where Christ carried his cross to his crucifixion, right, in Passover 2,000 years ago. So they have all these ties back to the Holy Land that I think they take very seriously.
What do they want? I mean, what is the plan? I mean, is this infiltrate businesses, infiltrate banking and politics in order to gain power? Or, you know, is it about making money? Is it about, is, What does victory look like if you're a...
I think it's a Catholic version of victory. So it's Catholic for the Holy Church, maintenance of Christendom worldwide. I think their impact, just like the Catholic Church, maybe is more profound in other countries, South America, for example. But I think it's the maintenance of the holy order of the Catholic Church and the Pope. So I think that's part of it, and the maintenance of the kind of social order. So I think that that's it, like the, which is why all of these old line, you know, aristocratic families are involved in it, because I think that's it. Like, so anti-Catholic, anti-left-wing kind of ideas, traditionalist, like the trad, what they call it in the Catholic Church, they call it trad Cath, so traditional Catholic. So I think that, that's the Knights of Malta and their thing. And it's kind of interesting, too, because their focus also is on the Holy Land, much like the Zionists. So they might have very similar interests and some overlapping concerns that are the same as people involved in the preservation of the state of Israel.
That's interesting that they're both kind of, I wonder if that might explain Michael Chertoff and John Bolton on my list, but I don't know. I mean, yeah. Those guys are hardcore 9/11 planning Zionists.
I get really bad vibes
from those guys, of course. And when I see them turning up on any list, catches my eyes. I wonder like what, I'm assuming they're not coming together in this group for the betterment of humanity. I'm guessing that this is a form looking for control. When I see, you know, every branch on the Bush tree is in here, and all the dangerous CIA founders and whatnot. I is this just an intelligence agency disguised as a Catholic charity?
It's an excellent question. I would say it's almost like an international intelligence agency under the Catholic Church, and a lot of these guys are involved in making personal connections with very other powerful people, other traditionalists. So I think that it's like Le Cirque, like what Le Cirque became, or even the CIA to a certain extent, these intelligence organizations that share information and maintain their own power against rivals, you know, maybe communist rivals or leftists that were all post-World War II. But I think the Knights of Malta is something that goes even farther back, of the maintenance of the Christian faith in general. So I think that that's kind of its heritage. I really do. And I think it's still meaningful. Just when you see all these names and Dulles and Bush family and things like that, they're still networking. And I think that was one of the strengths really of like George Bush Sr. too, was his correspondence with all these really wealthy, powerful people, and these connections is really what maintained and facilitates these guys' power. So
I wonder about George H.W. Bush. He'd be rolling over in his crypt if he knew that we had allowed the petrodollar arrangement to just sort of expire after 50 years. I think that guy would have been bombed. That guy would have bombed the shit out of you if you tried to get off of the petrodollar when he was around. The Venn diagram of CIA and USA presidents and Knights of Malta is pretty alarming to me. Is Trump a Knight of Malta? Do we know?
I don't think so. I haven't found that evidence that he is, but I think that he's initiated in some ways. He knows a lot of kind of secret society stuff and the Tesseract and the monoliths and stuff like that. He knows like initiated like a Tesseract concept of a Tesseract of the square within a square, which means like total control over things, is really something that you'd have to be initiated to understand. Now, because of the internet, you can kind of figure it out. People can share information, but he knows that. I have a video of him like in his gold doors, you know, all his gold things. So I think he knows a lot of stuff. And I think it's incumbent upon somebody with that much power to know all of these groups and secret societies and at least have the reins on them or understand them. So I think he knows the Knights of Malta. And I think he knows Alina Habas's dad is a bigwig.
Yeah, I doubt that's accidental. There's a Newt Gingrich quote that I put in my first book, and it was he said it at a time when Trump had just been elected but hadn't been inaugurated the first time around, and he was saying that Donald Trump's going to have a hard time in Washington, D.C. He's not a part of the club. He's not a part of the secret societies. I'm assuming that's probably had to change over either the 4 years that he spent in there or the 4 years afterwards that he spent fighting these people. He probably had to make some alliances and get himself familiar with the secret societies, because if you want to be the president of the United States, I mean, you're going to need some hardcore connections outside of the Oval Office.
Yeah, the Mafia is a secret society as well. So he's had to have been building, if he's building in New York City and in politics, even in a small level, he knows the Mafia. He just has to have connections or a connection guy through somewhere. It's secretive. I don't know where it is. But maybe it's Roy Cohn or somebody who's affiliated with Cohn or something like that. So he has to know that at least. But yeah, I think I read something. I saw an article where like 3/4 of the members, people living in D.C. are members of some kind of secret society or secret club. And these overlap with all these kind of like heraldic groups and things like that. So I think that Trump has upped his game. And I think that, you know, I think they have he has that famous speech at the Catholic. They have like this Catholic meeting where he confronted Hillary Clinton or whatever, called her a criminal. Like, that's another element of how powerful the Catholic Church is. And that guy talks about I can't remember the cardinal from New York City also talked. I saw him give a talk about the Knights of Malta. So they know what's going on. They know this is like a power. It's a power center of people who I think are very serious. I think they're very serious about their affiliation to their ideas of Christianity and the Roman Catholic Church.
Does it diverge from what traditional Christians and Catholics would view the church? I mean, is it more of a militarization of the Catholic Church, or is it about taking territory, or what? I wonder what their ideology is when it comes to something like this.
I think it's just like another one of those groups. Like the Jesuits are considered the military order of the Catholic Church. And I think the Knights of Malta are kind of like an intelligent networking element of the Catholic Church, where they're involved in the culture and facilitating relationships and the international, you know, growth of and maintenance of power of the Catholic Church, who is like some of the biggest landholders in the world, right? So I think that's it. And I think that people who are interested in that world integrate them. I mean, there's so many intel people that we know of, and a lot of it's just information gathering, but just putting like the Luces and the Dulleses and Philbys and all these other characters. These are what we know from America, but all these other, like you mentioned the Habsburgs and all these other, these are very well-known European royalty names too. So I think that's really it, is kind of like the people at the creme of the creme are people at the top maintaining power through their society connections, whether secret or public or private diplomacy. Yeah.
With this being sort of a European-centric secret society, I wonder how this will impact the Ukraine war. I wonder how many of these people are crawling around that, either wanting it to continue or maybe wanting it to wrap up, or they're European-based and having sort of the repercussions of, oh, this didn't go exactly how we wanted. We thought we were going to slap sanctions on Russia and it was going to cripple them, and instead it crippled us. And then we cut Nord Stream and that didn't hurt them. It hurt Germany. And, you know, boy, I mean, hey, Donald Trump, now that you're in office, we need a hand. We hear the Knights of Malta. I wonder what the relationship will be with regard to that particular war.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're thinking about it and discussing it at the Knights of Malta or the Pilgrim Society, trying to figure out a way out. But I can't imagine that war continues much longer. I think it's very naive that they thought they were going to collapse the Russian state. That strategic like ineptitude of colossal size. Like, it's so dumb. Like their attempted assault and breakdown and the waste of money. So I think that it's ended, but I think that, you know, somebody got this crazy idea that they were going to try to do it just to covet their, you know, somebody's estimated the value of Russian land ownings at like $70 or $80 trillion. So somebody's like, hey, man, maybe we can get our hands back on these assets. And no, it's not going to work. And they're lucky. I mean, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this war winds down. because I can't imagine that ongoing. And I think that the European, like their existence as states are on at risk right now. So I think they need to try to figure out a way to get out of it. Maybe the U.S. to a certain extent, but I think the Europeans right now, like they're on the, they're spiraling down. So
yeah, this idea of like world government or world governance that they've been talking about for a long, long time, start to find some of the same people that are talking about that in Knights of Malta. Are they pushing for world government, or are they just, is that not their angle? Are they?
Well, I think, I mean, if you want to talk about King Charles III, I think he's trying to do some kind of global reset through all the, and the Knights of Malta is one of the societies he's pulling, you know, strings of, including the Pilgrim Society, including all of his kind of like as the head of his, you know, the British aristocracy, all that stuff. So I think that there may be like this whole kind of new order of the ages kind of thing is coming out from the old one with them on top, obviously. But, you know, so I think that some of these wars have always benefited the aristocracy. They're ones who make the money. They're the ones who own the stocks and all the defense agencies. There's a huge connection between the Pilgrim Society and British defense. So a lot of those guys who are in the Pilgrim Society are also the head of, like, I forgot the name of the company, but the number one defense company in the UK. So they're making money off of these wars.
They're Serco? Stolen.
Or yeah, BAE it'll come to me. Yeah, I think, yeah, BAE. BAE, yeah, thanks. So, the, you know, I think that they're still trying to be on top and govern everything and control everything. And I think they're kind of, I mean, there's a really dark element to King Charles III and really dark elements of a lot of these other kind of aristocratic families in Europe, whether it's the Toscana, the de' Medicis are still around, Corsinis, Bonaparte, like I mentioned earlier, Bernard Arnault. These guys are all members of the Knights of Malta. It's incredible. Like, you can just go through these weird Hermes Dumas, French, Rochetta, Antonori, and then the von Hessen, I mean, if you remember kind of like the Hessians and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Max Warburg, yeah. Castelli. It's off the charts. So these guys are all, you know, all networked through this one group.
So if you're the Knights of Malta, where is your banking? Is it set up in the Vatican or is it set up in the City of London? I wonder.
I think it's Vatican. It's probably the Vatican Bank. I would assume that. I don't know offhand, but I would assume that that's the case, that they're banking through the Vatican.
Connections to Opus Dei?
No doubt. No doubt. A lot of the same members. So. No, then that's kind of another kind of like intense secret society within Catholicism, like real hardcore believers in the Catholic faith and loyalists, right? And some of the really high levels of Opus Dei, like they wear a girdle around their leg, like it digs into their flesh or something. It's like a form of penitence. Some of them get pretty serious, like self-flagellating.
Yeah.
Pretty intense kind of medieval type stuff, like, but loyalty, you know, a lot of loyalty oaths to the church, like the Jesuits. Mm-hmm. Like the Jesuits, you know, whatever the Pope says is truth. So I think these are all kind of overlap.
You better get the right Pope in there if everything the Pope says is true, because this current Pope was, you know, he's throwing guys out of helicopters in the 70s back in Argentina. He's a bad guy.
Operation Condor, right?
Like, dangerous character, yeah. Man. What have you?
The Catholic Church is rough, man. They do not like competition, and they've had tons of wars. They've had inquisitions. They've had internal crusades against heretics who they think are heretics. They had the Hundred Years' War, which was all against, they've had battles against Protestants in France and a lot of, like from the English-speaking world in the UK, like there were flips between Protestant and Catholic kings and things like that. So that there's a ruthless element within the Catholic Church that isn't as common today, but back in the day they would just destroy whole cities, lay them to waste, you know, if they were rebels against the Pope.
My knowledge of religious sects is relatively limited. What's the difference between the Protestants and the Catholics?
Well, the Protestant church really kind of is an outgrowth of the Catholic church in a way, because it was Martin Luther, right, had these theses in, I think, Wittenberg, where he's complaining at what he thought was corruption against the Catholic church. And this kind of Protestant came out of, it came at the same time of the printing press, right? So people were able to read the Bible. And so then they started reading the Bible. They were listening to, and Luther actually published his own Bible in German so they could read it in that instead of the Latin, which is really traditional. You're supposed to read in Latin. And that kind of caused a schism, and it led to the Protestant Reformation, people who thought that they could do kind of their own thing or have their own church. And then the guys who said the real authority goes back to the Pope. And so that created this Hundred Years' War and schisms. And, you know, a lot of the people came to the U.S. for religious freedom, right? So they were Protestants, the original settlers, the pilgrims. So it created this huge change. There were huge Huguenots in France, and then they got kicked out of France. They went to Arcadia and New Orleans. So there are a lot of like real moves of society based upon this kind of Protestant Reformation. Actually, it is kind of it is interesting because the Protestant Reformation came out of like people trying to internally reform the Catholic Church. So you had somebody, his name was Savonarola, who was kind of a bonfire of the vanities. Maybe you've heard that phrase, mm-hmm. but he kind of had that in Venice or Firenze in Italy. And he was trying to reform the Catholic Church, and they took him and burned him at the stake. And so that was kind of like a lesson to Martin Luther, like, hey, these guys are really serious. If you are going to try to kind of reform, you could potentially die. And they were trying to kill, you know, they were trying to, like, they put Luther up on the stand and his life was at stake. And I think his, like, famously said, I can only tell the truth. But these are huge schisms. I mean, there's been schisms within the Christian church. There's the great schism of, I think, the 11th century between the Orthodox and the Catholics. They split. But this was another schism, like in the 16th century, was the kind of Protestant Reformation splitting off of the Catholic Church. And then the Protestants all turned into all kinds of different sects and things like that.
And so do the Protestants have like a secret army somewhere? One of these?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that they have their own groups. They have their own kind of like different sects and their own kind of like you know, whether you're a Presbyterian or a Lutheran, or these things are still around. But to say that they have kind of their own kind of secret society or groups that are as hardcore as the Catholics, nothing comes to mind, you know, because the Catholics really had, you could start your own group, Knights of Malta or Templars or Jesuits or, you know, some of these other orders within the Catholic Church if you stayed under the Holy See. So they kind of grew in power and strength. I don't know if they had that as much in the Protestant Reformation or the Protestant groups, because nothing really comes to mind.
But the Pope picks the head of the Knights of Malta. Is that right?
I think so. I think that he's ordained. I think he's authorized by that. And they had actually just this huge thing within the last couple of years about the governorship of the Knights of Malta. It's in my slides. Like, you can see, like, they had something where the Pope's like, you're fired, and I'm going to make, and Bergoglio kind of laid down the law and put in a new guy. So they've had, like, you know, this is not that uncommon in the Catholic Church. They have a lot of kind of internal schisms, and there's always traditionalists against the liberals, and there was this Vatican II that all the liberals loved and the traditionalists didn't like because the mass changed. So there's all these kind of internal fights that have been going on in the Catholic Church. You know, as long as they maintain their loyalty to the hierarchy, everything is fine. But it's been ongoing. Like, there's real kind of internal battles. I did a show about the St. Gillan Mafia, which is another kind of group within the Catholic Church. They literally called themselves a mafia, but their goal was kind of like to win the culture war within the Catholic Church. So I think the Maltese, the Knights of Malta, are kind of like that. Like, they're the traditionalists and the networked with all these old families. That isn't the same thing with these other orders within the Catholic Church. They're not as socially networked as the Knights of Malta.
Do they, So Knights of Malta see these aristocracies as being assets and
no
groups
question.
That they're you know, members of their group, whereas the Catholic Church might see them as a threat or.
Right. Maybe as long as they're Catholic, you know, so as long, I think that the Holy Roman Empire was based like a aggregation of all these old Catholic aristocratic families that are part of the Knights of Malta. So I think that they see them probably as maintaining the church, and maybe they get donations. But I think a lot of these aristocrats derive their power, especially if they're Catholic, from the church, the authority of the church itself. So I think they would have to be a Knight of Malta, much like the King Charles III derives his authority as being like a bloodline from the line of David. So of course he would be part of this whole group, yeah. Or these groups that you know, go back to St. Peter, right? The foundation of the church, the Roman Catholic Church, is the Apostle Simon Peter, right, who went to Rome with Paul, and both were murdered, you know. According to lore, they were killed by Nero, I think, which is, you know, something else. I think Paul specifically was killed during the anti-Christian purges of Emperor Nero. So those are the kind of foundations of that the Catholic Church derives its authority upon. So I would assume a lot of these other Catholic churches that are Christian would want to be affiliated with these orders, whether it's the Knights of Malta or, you know, there's another one. There's like an Order of Charlemagne or something like that. There's all these other different orders too that are, it gets very arcane. Like it's like, there's a Vatican militia. There's the Templars, which supposedly died on the 13th century. But apparently there's rumors that they maintained themselves in their order after like being done in, you know. So there's this, there's the Knights of Columbus. I already mentioned them. There's the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem. So that's another Catholic chivalric order. So these are all things that are, you know, to maintain all these Catholic things and cultural preservation and things like that. So
we were mentioning Stanley McChrystal and William McRaven being members of this. And of course they were deeply involved in the Iraq War, and they envisioned themselves as being on like a new crusade. Who's the enemy as far as Knights of Malta are concerned? Would it be the Muslims?
Yeah. Muslims. I would say Muslims and people, enemies of the church. So I think for sure that would be the kind of, those are the people that are there wary of. I think that that's basically it. I think for sure that would be their, you know, stated enemies.
So we get the seven countries in 5 years, you know,
right.
And then, and we find out later that policy is really driven by the Zionist influence inside the White House. I would wonder, like, if you're a Knight of Malta, and it's like, well, we don't really love the Zionists either, but we do have a common enemy. Neither one of us are in favor of the Muslims. Is it possible that they've teamed up in some of these American empire adventures in the Middle East to work together, the Zionists and the Catholics, Knights of Malta, to...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Similar interests, no doubt. I think that that's possible, plausible. And maybe that's what like some of these kind of hybrids that you see, especially like under Bush Jr., is like they have similar interests. The Zionists and the Knights, these Christian Knights, see themselves as fighting these old ancient battles. And that Iraq maybe have been seen. And that's what Seymour Hersh said. Like that's kind of what it was, the issue was, is he said... alleged that Stanley McChrystal and JSOC and William McRaven were members of the Knights of Malta, and they were also part of Opus Dei, and the attitude of a large percentage of JSOC personnel, anti-Muslim and driven by a crusader mentality. And he quoted one individual saying, quote, "We're going to change mosques into cathedrals. That's an attitude that pervades. I'm here to say a large percentage of the Joint Special Operations Command." So this is 2011. So.
And JSOC is located at Fort Bragg, which has been in the news lately for being the head of psychological operations for the Army.
And who filtered through? Yeah, who else filtered through there recently, right? All these characters, Ruth and the guy who did the New Orleans killing and all this stuff like that.
Yep.
Incredible. Yep. But also, interestingly enough, Knights of Malta, you may think like it's a dead letter or something. agent, but the head, or something like an anachronism, but the head of the Supreme Court was the guy who swore in Trump, is a member of the Knights of Malta. It's Roberts. Oh, really? So they've had pictures of him going into a Knights of Malta, like outpost in Europe. So Roberts is also a Knight of Malta. And some of these other, Alan West is a known kind of conservative commentator, Knight of Malta, right? Mm-hmm. The guy who was trying to remember was Cardinal Dolan. It's familiar. Okay. So Dolan sat next to Trump. The head, Edward Fulner, who was the head of the Heritage Foundation from 77 to the president, is a Knight of Malta and a Knight of the Holy Sepulchre. So he's got overlapping things. The head of the Knights of Columbus in the U.S., with like billions of dollars in life insurance under their control, is both a Knight of Columbus and a Knight of Malta. So you see these strange kind of overlaps. Like these guys are all networked, but they're not emphasized. So you don't see that in the public as much. And one of the interesting things in the common culture is the movie, The Maltese Falcon. It's based on the lore of the Knights of Malta, which is when Charles V gave the Knights of Malta, the Maltese Islands, as a thing. He said, you don't have to pay me anything but one Maltese falcon a year, right? So that Maltese falcon was symbolically given to Charles and his heirs forever. And then it kind of morphed into the Maltese Falcon, right? With Humphrey Bogart is in it. It's a really good movie, but it's supposed to be this kind of symbolic jeweled Maltese Falcon from Malta that is about Knights of Malta lore. Sorry.
Are they associated together for in any particular industry, any particular business interest, or is this, are they in the trafficking industry? Are they in the drug industry? Like, where do they make their money, or does their money come from elsewhere? And they're just kind of networking together for power.
It's a really good question. I mean, I think that some of the Knights of Malta are definitely industrialists. Like some of these Italian guys are industrialists, mm-hmm. whether associated with autos or something like that. But some of these old line families have this kind of above board kind of jobs. And then some of them are associated with the mafia or trafficking, drug trafficking. There's been allegations of that, of like mafia behavior, or if not just totally associated with the mafia. So it's not clear cut, but there's definitely like some of these lists are industrialists and things like that. There's no question about it. But it's a mix. I mean, like Habsburg, Galen. Look at the Rockefeller families are part of it. So they're part of finance, oil, pharmaceuticals. I mean, they got their hands in all kinds of different.
What's the Orsini family into?
Right. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at my notes. But I think that they're a landed aristocratic family. So they probably have all kind of these guys usually diversify their stuff, but. I do have a list of a lot of these guys. Like there's some really interesting documentation of people who've done some research on these guys, but the Orsinis are like, let me see if I can find it.
I'm assuming some form of banking.
Yeah.
It seems like everyone's got a bank. Once you get into that level,
I think that's the goal. Like, so once you get a bunch of money, you start a bank. Prince Leo is a top owner of Israeli mafia, Orsino Indragheta clan. So that's like Southern Italian mafia, like Indragheta. And then affiliated with the Cleveland crime family, managed the Rosicrucian Order of the Holy Cross. The arms dealing, ecstasy.
Whatever.
Yeah, so it's like wherever you make money. These guys are not like clean. They're not clean. A lot of these guys aren't as clean as you might think. And some of these other guys, these are knights, like one of the Vincent Viola, Italian-American, who owns the Florida Panthers, NHL. Mm-hmm. And it's also associated with like Order of St. George and these old Bourbon families. Like you would never know. Like one of the interesting things that happened too, since we talked about the Pilgrim Society, is I think they fired the Jets coach. But the guy who owns the New York Jets is a member of the Pilgrim Society.
Oh, Woody Johnson.
Yeah, he's a Pilgrim.
Interesting. I don't know why I'm surprised. Johnson & Johnson family, big pharma. You're going to have some dirty fingers if you're in that long enough.
So I think these elite societies are about preservation and maintenance of power and your social class and status along with other people. So I think like that's what you do. Just like when you become a bank after you make money in some other industry, you start loaning out money and making real money. Mm-hmm. I think that that's what you do is you become associated with these kind of groups, whether it's the Knights of Malta, Pilgrim Society, wherever you can get in, you know, Bilderbergers.
Yeah. So if you're a high ranking Knight of Malta and you've got Trump back, Woody Johnson, we just mentioned, was his ambassador to
Count of St. James, the Court of St. James,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So London to England, the UK.
Yeah. So he was his ambassador there. So what do you've got Trump for, let's just say, 4 more years pending any sort of catastrophe. What's the goal? Consolidate more power, get people out of your way. I wonder how they would, if you take the time to position your people around him, what do you want him to do? Do you want him to continue? Do you want him to kick off World War III in the Middle East and go after the Muslims? Is that ideologically aligned? I wonder what the next 4 years is going to look like with him.
Yeah, that's a really good question. With these people around and the Knights of Malta, I would expect Syria not to exist. And I'd be very nervous if I lived in Lebanon because there'd be a reevaluating of all those borders, much like what happened after World War I, Sykes-Picot. So I think that if you see Trump like renaming things like the Gulf of Mexico and the Gulf of America and going after Greenland, I think making seemingly radical change in the Middle East is not outside the realm of possibility. So I think that's a really good question. Like, I think they may just divvy up Syria and put it into different, you know, give some to Israel, keep some for the United States, the oil there, and give some to Turkey and just destroy it, like, and just let it devolve, just like they did to Libya and some of these other kind of things. Iraq, I don't know if it'll ever really kind of reform itself. So, and then there's money to be made, right? Always in defense, like you mentioned, BAE. So money can be sent to those, your buddies. I don't know if Halliburton will ever see any money under Trump, but maybe there's another way to kind of make sure your pals get enriched. So I would be kind of nervous if I was a certain group of people, especially maybe Muslims are the kind of new, kind of unfortunate, the kind of target, I guess, is a polite way of putting it, especially after Gaza. Which, yeah, you know, is really one of the great crimes of human history. But
you mentioned Greenland. What does Denmark have to do with any of this? Are they involved in his, with the Knights? Is this a play for the Arctic? Is this to pivot to prevent Russia from dominating that Arctic region? What do you make
all of Greenland? All of the above? I think the Denmark
mind the place, so, yeah, pull everything out of the mountains and out of the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's really the future of these kind of minerals and stuff like that. So Greenland, God only knows what's underneath there. They've, you know, there's nobody there to fight you back for it other than the Danish. So I guess if you pay him off, maybe that's a good play. So, I mean, there's weird talk about Canada too. So Canada is another, resource rich, and Alaska, which he just signed a presidential directive to kind of exploit all the valuables there. Yeah. These are, a lot of these places are not determined whether what's up there, you know, what's up in the far realms of Canada and Greenland. So I think that if you're a country with $35 trillion in debt, you need to find some real assets or something to exploit to kind of bring down that debt before the whole place implodes. So I think that Greenland's on the table for these guys. I would never have thought that, certainly under Biden. So, and then, you know, there might be a Knights of Malta play in there and some decisions being made with the Pilgrim Society. We'll see.
We'll have to come back to that one. We'll see. We'll check out and see how Trump's second term unfolds and check and see if it's got. I mean, I'm going to be looking at him through the Knights of Malta lens from this point on, not knowing what you've explained as far as like the people surrounding him and their relationships and what their end goal is to, you know, to. If it's to remake the Middle East in their image and then keep an eye on that. If it's, most of these people are European ancestry. We don't want to destroy, you know, we've already got our hands full with Ukraine. Maybe we should wrap that thing up and focus on the Middle East. I'm curious to know where it goes. If you had to guess, is that the pivot? Pivot to the Middle East?
I think so. I think they're going to reformat the Middle East. I really do. I think they're going to take give it to the Israelis. They're going to give southern Lebanon to the Israelis, southern current Syria, and they're just going to let Syria just die, just implode. I think that's really what's going to happen. And there'll be negotiations and something like, I think that the war, it's really not a war on Gaza. The slaughter in Gaza will be curtailed and other targets will be put in the kind of crosshair, so to speak. Yeah, it hasn't stopped. I mean, you can't see it stop like from Bush 2002, right, to the present. So, then there's money to be made and there's a lot of interest there. And the Israelis are very ambitious. I think they have ambitious goals. So,
Rare Israel Project, they've got it on the patch. On the side on their uniforms. I mean, there's no denying that they are in this to take additional land. And that's
So I'd be very nervous. Like, I mean, because I think that there's a lot of people who will be side up, like the Knights of Malta will side up with the Israelis on their side in a conflict, not on the side of the Muslims or the current residents of the Middle East. So
where's the best place for people to get your podcast and to connect with your work?
Yeah. William Ramsey Investigates. I'm in the top 0.5 podcasts in the world. And I have 5 books you can find on Amazon on a wide variety of different subjects. And Patreon is, you can watch my 5 documentaries on Crowley, Smiley Face Killers, and Occult Hollywood.
Nice. We appreciate your deep insight into this shady group of characters. Of course, it's a shady group. If Trump's going to associate with them, I should expect nothing less. That's William Ramsey, everybody. Go check out his outstanding work. Bookmark it. Give him 5 stars. He definitely has earned it. Go check out his Patreon as well. And if you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that, or go to activistpost.com and naturalblaze.com. I'm the new owner over there, so have fun and see what you think. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.